And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Monday afternoon. Well, today we visit with El Nuevo Herald Metro columnist Daniel Shore Roth. He's also a frequent op-ed columnist in the Miami Herald. Shore has been with El Nuevo Herald since 1999 and leans to underdog issues in the community. The poor, elderly, the bullied, and those sexually discriminated against. Welcome to you, Daniel Shore Roth. It's been a few years since you've been on.
It's a privilege for an immigrant to be here. I was here, I think, 5 years ago.
It's been that long. Yeah. It just kind of flies by. So you're on temporary leave from the paper to write a biography about the late Bishop Emeritus Agustin Roman, especially beloved by Cuban Catholics. What sparked that interest?
Well, I came across him in my coverage of religion news for El Nuevo Herald. Last year, it was the 50th anniversary of the arrival of the image of Our Lady of Charity, the image that it's in La Ermita, Our Lady of Charity Chapel in Coconut Grove. This marked the beginning of Hispanic or Cuban Catholicism here in South Florida with the arrival of the image. There was a mass of 30,000 people in the Miami Stadium. So as I was covering this story, which was very important for our community, since, you know, Catholic Cubans are a big portion of the population, sure, especially our readers in El Nuevo Herald, I got to know very well Bishop Roman. And throughout interviews that we were doing, I just realized this is not a story. You know, this is a book about him. He's being the spiritual leader of Cuban Catholics. He's done a lot of ecumenical work with different churches. He had a major role in 1987 on the riots in Atlanta and Oakdale, Louisiana.
The prison riots.
Yes, the prison riots. He even got a phone call from Reagan, you know, and to congratulate him for, he was an intermediate between the rioters and the authorities. And especially because he was such a kind person, and I could tell how people loved him around. So I felt this was a good mission for me to be part of something new and exciting. And I always heard that to write a book, the topic had to come to you, and you had to like feel about something.
Roman also had the sentiment that Miami Cubans should be more sympathetic with Haitian refugees as well.
Yeah, no, he was basically with the Haitians and with other minorities as well, you know, so that was really a great person. Now, there is a talk in the community about starting a cause for canonization, and a cause for canonization, it's a process where, you know, devotees present evidence to the Vatican, and that can take, you know, for sainthood, that can take up to from 10 years, or it can take 400 years.
Even Mother Teresa had a long wait.
Pope John Paul II was very, very short, and it was criticized because of the short time. They have to prove some sort of different miracles. It's a whole process, different stages. Now, if a cause for canonization is started for Bishop Roman, guess who the Vatican is going to, you know, what's the Vatican going to read? To start the research, they're going to read my book. So I'm basically writing, you know, a biography of a potential, you know, saint. And that's a privilege for someone like me with my background, and especially, you know, being part of that devotion. It's just a privilege.
Let's talk journalistically. As a journalist who haven't been having to bang out columns and be working every day and have a lot of deadlines, suddenly you've got time on your hands that you can easily put off. Well, maybe I'll just write double up tomorrow. And I could see that happening to me, not having to do a daily program.
It is a challenge, and everybody will tell you. I mean, discipline and time management is the number one key, you know, to process a book. I'm not very good at it, so I don't want to, you know, I don't have the best example. What I'm focusing now, it's as if it was a big story. I'm doing all the research. I met with Bishop Roman many times before he died for months, and I recorded his life. So I've already transcribed all those tapes. I've been doing research with the different archives, the Herald, the Voice, different newspapers, and I'm interviewing people who knew him from childhood up to now. So basically I'm getting evidence from other, you know, from third sources. And so I'm in the process of interviews, and I'm basically, when I'm done with all of that, I'm going to start writing. You know, it's
how about more about you and your background? We're speaking with Daniel Shore Roth of El Nuevo Herald. About you, you're Venezuelan, the grandson of Holocaust survivors, and what created this devotion to underdogs?
I think I wrote about it a few weeks ago. I was a victim of bullying, and as someone whose voice was not heard, and it was the 80s, you know, in Venezuela, so it wasn't easy for me. I developed a sympathy or a way to identify myself with the underdog, with anyone who's discriminated against, with anyone who's suffering as a consequence of, you know, behaviors or policies of others. So I think that developed that sense of closeness. And as you were mentioning in the introduction, you know, I've basically worked closely with all the vulnerable populations, whether it's victims of domestic abuse, the homeless, you know, low-income neighbors, you know, a child or juveniles in detention. Those are the populations that I tend to defend in my articles. What developed it was feeling part of that population. So it's an issue of empathy and identification with the suffering.
Now, you advocate a lot of gay causes. Is perhaps your devotion to underdogs based a little bit on being Hispanic gay youngster and sort of the macho of some Latinos on that? Or, and also, is that macho business, is that overstated?
It's a stereotype.
We kind of assume that, but
it's,
I don't know.
It's maybe it's a little, it's part of a stereotype, but maybe it affects more, you know, ethnic minorities or depending on what country you come from. There's, you know, a lot of openness now in Mexico City, in Uruguay. So it is opening up. I consider myself a member of three minorities. So I would call it a minority within a minority within a minority. I'm Jewish, raised in a Catholic country. I'm gay, raised in a machista country. And I'm also Hispanic. So it's here in the American, you know, so I'm Latino.
So that's the trifecta.
Yeah. And plus, I'm semi-vegetarian. So that also... you know, makes me part of another minority. So I think, yeah, being part of that minority helps me in that purpose. My goal is always public service with every column that I write, with every book that I write. How can I affect the community in a positive way? And how can I help others? You know, I have to take advantage of the position that I have as a columnist, as somebody who can be sitting here and talking to you. It's a privilege for someone like me. So I have to make up of this time the best that I can, you know, delivering a message that can inspire others to do something similar and see that there's great potential, you know, for everyone in this country.
One of your columns that sparked my interest in having you back, Daniel, a few months ago, was talking just about common courtesies in South Florida and how we seem to have a lack of them. We rank number 32 of 35 in the friendly city category. And you even went far enough in 2011 to start a journal to document the rudeness of South Florida.
Yeah, I just, you know, seeing so much rudeness on the streets, instead of letting myself go with the anger and all those sentiments, I said, let me transform this into a positive experience. Let's start the journal. And that's how it started, basically. You know, it was a counterpart to frustration on the roads. And I've basically gathered all sorts of anecdotes. And every now and then, you know, being that my columns are about topics so deep and so, in a way, sometimes sad, it's refreshing sometimes for me and fun to write about this vanity and lack of courtesy and things that I, you know, register in my journal. You know, like I was, you know, like I mentioned once, I was, you know, I was going to donate all this clothing in Salvation Army, and there was a pickup truck right, you know, right here on Julia Turtle Causeway, and something dropped from that, and they didn't, you know, it hit my car, and they never even stopped to say, you know, something happened to your car. Yeah, just, you know, went along. Then the anecdotes of the gym, things that happened there, you know, the king of the towels that uses all these towels without any conscience. It just, I think everyone has that journal. It's just that they don't put it together. You know, who doesn't get bothered by texting in movie theaters? You know, I do spinning and there's people texting in spinning. I mean, it really ruins the experience. We live in, like I say, it's a, you know, in a society here in Miami where people have a lot of feelings of entitlement. You know, this is me. This is the way I do it. And, you know, and we see it, I think we all suffer it in a way.
I'm always amazed sitting in a small, quiet doctor's waiting room, and then somebody's in there doing some emotional conversation that's, you know, like, really, we really don't want to be a part of this. Couldn't you take a hike out in the hall and make your call there? You also talked about sculpted beautiful people on South Beach using disabled parking spaces.
Oh, yeah. No, that's that's one of my biggest frustrations. And if we pay attention about the people who use parking for disabled, it's just, I mean, very, you know, healthy and athletic and young people, you know, using these parking spaces. I mean, I saw a bouncer for a club. You know, that's a person who's the bouncer, meaning the security guard of a fancy club, using a parking for disabled next door. I mean, it was just amazing. You know.
You know, I'm reminded it's August the 6th, so we're really moving into the bad days of hurricane season. And if you really want to see crudeness when a storm is imminent, the way people behave, I've seen people get in fistfights over batteries and to go to the Home Depot parking lot with plywood, and oh, my Lord. It's good to stock up early and not have to be a part of that madness.
Oh, yeah. I mean, stores and lines and Walmart. I mean, you should, you know, pay attention to things that are going around you, and you have your own journal of rudeness and lack of courtesy and lack of social conscience.
I'm always amazed at people who will brave the tribulations of, like, Black Friday, going to Brands Mart or something like that, where the line of cars is out on the Palmetto Expressway. It's amazing. We're speaking with Daniel Shore-Roth. We're going to take a short break and be back with more. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. We resume our conversation with El Nuevo Herald Metro columnist Daniel Shore-Roth. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in with a comment or question of Daniel, that's 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576. And also email if you're a little shy. That's radio@WLRN.org. radio@WLRN.org. Daniel, before we move on to another topic talking about courtesy, you mentioned in a column that you'll call security when you feel you've been treated badly if somebody butts in front of you or line. Don't you maybe fear some retaliation from the hotheads in South Florida?
Well, a little bit, but I just, you know, I just feel I have to be, you know, it's, I just have to be honest with myself, and this is the way I'm feeling. I have to, you know, call security. I think people should do it if security is willing to help. Depends who you're, you know, depends who the person is. You know, I mean, I was seeing this bouncer using a disabled parking. I wasn't going to tell him, hey, move your car. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's just an issue with the, you know, I just feel, you know, it's about personal responsibility. And people have a lot of, you know, arbitrarily, and they tend to be rude. And I always respond, I try to respond with sympathy and courtesy, and, you know, unless they're really on my nerves. But, you know, you kill people with happiness and with the love. And when I get these letters from readers, you know, sending me you know where, I always respond with something beautiful and nice, and people get, you know, more upset.
I always have some difficulties in Publix at the 10 or under speed lane. And, of course, no checks. Somebody's there and they have 15 items. I look, if it's an elderly person or maybe a young woman with two or three kids that are squalling around. But if it's not, when do I say something to that person or to the checker to say he's got too much? It's kind of a weird decision to make.
It depends on how, on your hurry, on how you're feeling. I mean, if you think it's something, I mean, something like that might not be as, you know, as aggravated as other things where people are, like, you know, lighting a phone, speaking on the phone in a movie theater. I mean, if you're on the line, you can wait maybe two more minutes. But what about spoiling a movie with a cell phone on, or a class in the gym, or somebody smoking, you know, right across you when, you know, you need your own air? So in those senses, you know, I think there's no rule of when you can tell someone. It's just a matter of, you know, how you feel at the moment, how much patience you have. You know, in road waits, that's where we see most the rage on the road of how people respond to others. I always people are in a hurry, you go on, you know. And once someone was like beeping my car because it was a red light. I mean, what are people, why do people want me to cross a red light? You know, and I remember once I opened the window and I said to him, I really hope you don't get a heart attack, you know, with that type of feelings and behaviors. I think.
Or in those traffic situations, when you're a nice guy and you let them go ahead of you and you don't get that wave, you feel kind of cheated.
Yeah, but you know what? It's about peace and, you know, inner peace. And that's the only way to drive here.
Let's take a quick call. We've got a Miami caller. This is Jan. Hi.
Hello, this is Jan, and I live in Miami. And I'm wondering if Daniel would be interested in doing the reverse of journaling all of the really nice things that he sees people do, you know, whether it's on the road or in the shopping line or at the movie store, movies or at the stores, just to get a contrast and maybe change the focus so that we could have a better number for not having the most rudeness in Miami.
But aren't those things expected?
What?
The good things, being courteous.
Well, I think it's very easy to do, and that's what I have been focusing on. I'm on the road quite a bit. And I've been really trying to focus on people that are doing it the right way and showing kindnesses to each other. And maybe that's part of the problem. If we're looking for the people that we think is a jerk, we're going to find them. But if we can change our focus and maybe at the same time extend those same type of courtesies, we could change the way people are being perceived.
Okay, well, I think, first of all, I appreciate your suggestion. I think I should do another journal as well, and I will. But just to defend my position, I also do many columns about the kindness of people. And I've even done a column about how to stay positive and spiritual in unemployment. So,
and you write about spirituality, what, once a month?
Once a month, I have a spiritual column that runs on the editorial pages. It's all, you know, it's all about kindness and compassion and giving. We're just selecting one or two columns in which I feature, you know, that journal. But I don't think, you know, it's fair to judge my whole work on that, because I am a person who always focus on the positive. And I think I bring into light, you know, beautiful things of, you know, blind musicians that are doing a CD in the Lighthouse for the Blind, or other stories like that that are inspirational. Recently I wrote about, you know, a philatelic treasure of people who had this stamp from Cuba of Our Lady of Charity. But I do appreciate the caller's suggestion, because it's another way to look at things. And I think you're doing the right thing on, focusing on the positive while you're driving. For me, it was just a way of expressing a frustration of others and just bringing to light an issue that affects the community. Because my column is about the lives and issues that affect South Floridians and don't get enough public attention.
Again, our number, we have lines open, 1-800-743-WLRN. 1-800-743-9576, and email, that's radio@wlrn.org. This is Elizabeth, an email. She says she experiences courtesies here that she didn't experience in her former Midwestern city. Doctor's office, frequently patients will say good morning or buenos dias. In other words, bus stop riders will say buenos, and also there are many rude things, but some lovely, lovely common courtesies here. Well, of course there are.
Well, that's great. I mean, I'm glad. I'm not, you know, focusing on the uncourteous only, but she's coming from the Midwest and she's finding that here. It means we're changing, you know, and there's good hope for our community.
I remember taking my wife to the Midwest in Missouri, where I'm from, for the first time, a born and raised Miamian. She said, I can't believe it. The people here, when they say, have a nice day, they really mean it. She was shocked. Let's move on to gambling in downtown Miami. Daniel, it's something you've written about quite a bit. these big casinos moving in. And you point out that only in Las Vegas are big casinos operating in a downtown, urban, and financial district area.
Yeah, I've had like a bunch of columns this year and last year because the issue of gambling is really affecting me, you know, in a personal way, because I'm afraid that this will change, you know, the face of downtown Miami, and that we will drive a lot of people into gambling addiction. It's just not good. I mean, I'm not bringing a moral issue. It's just, it's not good for the community. You know, we have a downtown area that has, you know, compatibility in land use things. I mean, we have the cultural, you know, center, we have the clubs, we have the housing, and I just feel like putting
Midtown.
In the Midtown, and I spoke about the different components, and people have been working for many years to develop an identity or different identities for downtown Miami. This will change completely, and even though people think this will bring jobs and will raise real estate prices, eventually people are going to leave downtown because they're not going to want to leave with the traffic. I mean, imagine, you know, the Arch Center and a casino. The issue of availability and accessibility of gambling also drives up the gambling addiction and how people are at risk of putting, you know, all their lives and all their money into danger. So I'm glad, you know, the Bimini and Bahamas, those are good places for the casinos, but I just don't want them in Miami.
Now, some people would say, does that mean the Crown Liquors shouldn't open a new liquor store because of alcoholism?
It's different because a liquor store that sells alcohol, and I think I did mention in a column, doesn't drive up the rate of alcoholism. But it's been proven that a big casino that's located, because it's the availability
and a first-time experience for many, I suppose.
And it's, yeah, and it also, you know, it drives all the, you know, glamour and people who want to be part of this. And they also, they do, you know, free liquor, free rooms. It doesn't, it's not fair to compare it with the liquor store that's a, you know, a store in the corner with a casino that's going to lure thousands of people, many, many teenagers and young, you know, people who when might feel this is the cool thing to do, this is a fun thing, and then they get trapped into this new behavior that it's unhealthy for us. And so I'm basically battling that with different angles, trying to portray the human side of gambling. And I did a column that I was mentioning to you before about the tragic face of compulsive gambling, in which I feature somebody who had suffered from gambling addiction
and lost everything,
and how he was he was turning around things, and he was now helping others.
In fact, wherever compulsive gambling strikes, you're going to have divorces, bankruptcy, possibly crime, kids losing a parent.
The social consequences and the hazards are not really something enticing. So, as a reader wrote, he says, when you take the compulsive gambling problem into account, it seems that misery outweighs glamour and jobs. And that's how I feel about it.
There's even talk about trying to preserve the Miami Herald building as a historic site. I'm not sure whether that's going to fly or not.
I don't know. I mean, it's really hard because I don't know. I'm not following. They did it with the Sears Tower. So right. That was saved when they did the Arch Center. But here we're talking about a private corporation. You know, the Arch Center was, at the end, you know, a public entity.
And not just a figurehead landmark, but a huge a huge parcel of property.
Yes. So, I mean, I don't know how that's going to work, the preservation. I know they're trying. But, you know, there's a lot of money here involved. And as we saw this recently in the Herald, you know, Genting is again starting another process of, you know, millions of dollars in donations. And, you know, now we're seeing, you know, a petition. At the end, it's going to come into a petition to the Constitution that's going to overpass the legislature. They're going to try to get enough signatures to
now, the lotto flew by petition, but I don't think Florida voters historically have really been very kind to gambling propositions. But maybe in 2012 or 13 or 14, they would be.
Yeah, well, South Florida has, because there has been some.
South Florida has, but it still would have to pass North Florida.
It will have to pass.
But if they give them enough of the pie, like what happened with pair of mutuals.
They will, because the thing is that the Orlando, you know, the Orlando area hotels are really afraid of having these competitors, and they do have, you know, a lot of strength.
Again, our number 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, and email, that's radio at WLRN.org. Next caller up, we've got Maria in Miami. Hi, Maria.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I had a small story for the Metro columnist, Daniel. Hi, how are you, Daniel?
How are you? Thank you so much for thinking about me.
Yes, I've never called in before, but I always listen to NPR. I'm calling because my grandmother was a dear friend of Bishop Roman, and I had no idea you were writing a book on him. And I have a story that would probably interest you that I don't think many people know, that really shows the compassion and love and humanity of this person. I knew him all my life growing up because he would visit my grandmother. She was involved in an organization with, I don't know if you know, Monsignor Bosa Masvidal.
Yes.
For it was called UCE, the Union of Cubans in Exile. And she was very involved in that organization. And Bishop Roman became a dear friend of hers. And I knew him all my life as I was a little girl growing up. And when my grandmother was dying in the hospital, as my father tells the story, my grandmother was at Mercy Hospital, very close to the Ermita you spoke about, and he would come by every single day and bring her soup that he either, you know, had made or bought for her. And he would bring her soup and he would feed her every single day. And my father told of several times when he and my mother would come and visit my grandmother, and she. There would be a young priest by her side, and my parents didn't know who he was. And he would always tell my parents that Bishop Roman had sent him to feed my grandmother her soup for the day. And I just think it just shows, you know, so much. As he got busier through the years, he never lost his humanity and his compassion for others. And I just wanted to give you that story and let you know that I would love to, you know, share other stories with you for your book.
Okay, great. If anybody has stories or wants to share something with me, I can be reached via Facebook, Daniel Shore Roth, or my email is dshore, and that's dshore@yahoo.com. And I'll be very happy. There's hundreds of stories like this where, you know, this man was super kind. And the UCE, the Union of Cubans in Exile, is partly helping sponsor this project, so at least,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's helping part of it, sponsoring my work. And
gosh, I had no idea. I'm sorry. My grandmother was the president for many years, and my father was the treasurer for many years while my grandmother was alive. And I had no idea that you were writing this book. It's such a joy to hear that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Email me.
All right,
when do
yes,
you expect
I will.
To have it finished, Daniel?
Well, that's a long story. I mean, I have a 3-month book leaf, but as I develop more the book, I've just realized you really can't write a biography about the first Cuban bishop in the United States in 3 months. So I don't know. I mean, initially I wanted to do it for the book fair this year because he died this year, and also this year is the 400th anniversary of the finding of the statue or the image of Our Lady of Charity in the Seas of Cuba. That's where the veneration starts, you know, when this image was found in the Bay of Nipe. This year is the 400th anniversary. That's what drove the visit of the Pope to Cuba to commemorate this, you know, fourth century of devotion of Virgin Mary. It's an advocation of Virgin Mary, known as Our Lady of Charity. So I can't say a date. I mean, I hope, you know, as soon as God wants me to finish. You know, it's as I talk to more people and I realize, people tell me, do you understand the sense, you know, that what you have in your hands, you know, people who believe in Bishop Roman as a possible candidate for canonization, they say, you have a treasure. You know, so it's a commitment for me. I'm Jewish. I'm not Cuban. And I think that makes it, you know, more relevant universally. You know, if the Vatican is going to look at the accomplishments of Bishop Roman and some of the testimonies that I'm gathering, as our caller mentioned, you know, it's going to have validity. So I'm still, you know, we're still looking for a publisher. We're still looking for sponsors. I'm trying to maybe get some of the Cuban foundations, you know, the Bacardi Foundation, the Mascanosa, people who are Catholic and Cuban. Hopefully I can get someone interested in this project. It's been a challenge, you know, promoting the idea.
And you can be contacted at Daniel Shore Roth at Facebook.
Yes, that's the best way, or dshore, dshoer, at yahoo.com.
Let's take another call or two. We have lines open, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, and also email, that's radio@wlrn.org. And we'll move along. We've got Janice in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Janice.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
I just want to comment. I was listening to you talking about having a journal on rudeness. And when I first moved here from Indiana, Chicago, I thought to myself, for about 3 years, I would come home sometimes crying at how rude the people were, and I couldn't understand it. And but I've gotten better, and it's gotten better. It just takes a little while. But I want to see if you think that there's any correlation, because Miami was named one of the rudest cities. It was also named one of the most stressed cities about 2 years ago. We also have the largest amount of bicycle fatalities because of being hit by cars. And we are the number one city in the whole country for Medicare and Medicaid fraud. And to me, maybe not to other people, but to me, there's a correlation with what's happening here about people caring about truth and honesty and being nice to people. And I think it's really important, because sometimes I over the last several years, I'm almost embarrassed to be from Florida. I'm from Fort Lauderdale, not from Miami, but still, it's sort of daunting to have all these negative things coming out. And then in particular, it's been about Miami. And I think that Miami has some wonderful things, you know, because I go down there with friends often, but it is kind of scary. People have asked me from other states, because I travel a lot, is it still dangerous down there? So what can we do? I mean, what can we do to create a better image of our South Florida environment?
Actually, Broward County the last couple of years has probably had more corruption that's been exposed than even Miami-Dade.
Yeah. I mean, I think it starts with an individual, you know, how you start changing your surroundings and using it. I mean, that's what you have control of, how you treat other people and how those people will maybe treat others by, you know, learning your example. I try to do it through my writing, you know, raising awareness about these issues. You know, the fatalities for pedestrians, that's really bothering me too, because they're mainly elderly Hispanics that are, you know, crossing, and I've written about it, you know, about public safety. We've also had good publicity. The New York Times has had, you know, good stories on the travel to Miami. I mean, there was a good story, I think, recently on the Thursday Style section. It had to do with the, you know, some of the, you know, bars and clubs and stuff. I know that's not really the spiritual of it, but there has been some good publicity about it, you know, on that sense.
I think having good times has always been a big part of South Florida.
Yeah, we're number one when it comes
economy,
to...
And economy. Yeah.
When it comes to, in those rankings, we're always on the top when it comes to fun, you know, beautiful people. But it's all this, you know, what I was saying in one of my columns, that it will be a blessing if one day, besides being among the most attractive people, we could also earn the top ranking in kindness.
But again, we're speaking with Daniel Shore Roth, El Nuevo Herald Metro columnist. Daniel, you've written also about police violence versus immigrants, particularly in homestead, and you talked about that the rhetoric, the political rhetoric that's been going on in our country has sort of unleashed more intolerance to immigrants and thinking of them as illegals rather than human beings.
That's the way I feel about it. And we just saw an example a few weeks ago. It was in Homestead, where there was a video of some alleged beating of by Homestead police, and I had a quote from one of the activists that was saying that this is something common, more common than it should. I think the rhetoric, and I believe it's something national, and I understand that some people might feel against illegal immigration. I also know that many of, there are criminals in every group of people, but notwithstanding the issue of, the law and immigration, we're treating people, and that's, where I think we're forgetting, the human side of these people and who they are and the families that I have, that they have, and how they've developed bondings here. And, treating people, I think treating people well, it's in a way, it's a right people have. It's like adequate housing. We don't have adequate housing here for many people, and it's a human right. And many people also, people don't agree with me, but I think education is also an issue of a human right. And, we overlook those issues. I believe it's not fair to look at immigrants down or illegal immigrants, because they are the ones that are, cutting the vegetables in the restaurants, as I was mentioning in that article, cleaning people's houses. So we have to see the human side on everyone, on a homeless person, on a victim, or an immigrant.
Tell me more about your journalism career before you were a columnist.
Well,
I'm sure you had the everyday grind that most reporters
I have. Came to this country for graduate school. That was the formal reason for me to move from Venezuela to the United States. I was a journalist back home in Caracas. And my first job has been my only job here in the United States, which is with the Miami Herald Media Company. I started as a reporter for El Nuevo Herald, I covered business for many years, but I always had that inclination towards commentary and human interest stories. I evolved as a reporter, and eventually I started a part-time column in a Sunday section called Séptimo Día. And eventually I became a full-time Metro columnist. 4 years ago, I was finally able to do the crossover to English. The Herald was kind enough to start using my material in English, and that's why I'm sitting here, because now I have access, or I have a wider audience. So for me, it's been really a privilege to be in English language, being from El Nuevo Herald. And now with the different changes in the media, I'm back to a reporter doing work covering religion, education, doing my columns. And one of my most favorite projects is my once a month spiritual column that is published in the op-ed pages once a month or once every other month. And it's called Spiritual Journeys and La Mirada Interior in the Spanish version. I try to do them both in Spanish and English.
It's very admirable that someone can work professionally and write in two languages.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and you also speak Hebrew.
I speak Hebrew, yes. I can't write in Hebrew, and it's
my that'd be a little too much writing in two.
I can read a little bit, but my grandfather was very, very proud of me, and he was an immigrant, and he was always very proud that I knew Spanish and English, coming from Poland into Venezuela, and that's where my origins come from. I come from Holocaust survivors, as you mentioned, and that has also given me some sense of sensibility about issues, persecution and also being a survivor, because I am the grandson of Holocaust survivors, and the trauma that gets passed through generations that affected me as well.
Let's take a short break. We're speaking with Daniel Shoroth. He's the El Nuevo Herald Metro columnist. We'll be back. And we return 48 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. We have lines open if you'd like to share a comment or question with Daniel Shoroth. That number is 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576. Also email, a little quicker, that's radio@wlrn.org, radio@wlrn.org. And we'll move along to another caller. This is a Miami listener, and we've got Enrique. Enrique, go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here.
Well, go ahead, what's your question?
Oh, my, it's not my question, it's an observation.
Okay.
Yes, good afternoon. I've heard your program many times. This is the first time that I call. And prompted by Monsignor Roman and what he did for the community, and it is interesting that today's program is a juxtaposition of the rudeness in Miami and what Monsignor Roman was, which was a very gentle man. And
so you want to talk about the juxtaposition between us talking about rudeness and also the gentility and humanity.
Right, right. And I like to use that to highlight more the gentleness.
It's a great way of juxtaposition, and I appreciate it. And it's in fact a reality. I mean, Bishop Roman was all about kindness and love and compassion. And that's what we need more of. You know, when people are asking about solutions, I mean, we need more behaviors, more thoughts of, you know, Bishop Roman never spoke bad about anyone. You know, he just was very kind, and, you know, it's just an amazing person. And, you know,
I remember going back to 1992 post Andrew and how this community came together, and neighbors who would rarely even say hello to each other, you know, were helping out each other and getting ice and barbecuing meats so they wouldn't spoil, and helping out people with getting tarps on roofs, and a lot of humanity really did show through then. I remember I hosted a program called Care Force Radio after that, and it was really touching how much people did care about their community members.
Somehow tragedy, for some reason, you know, a human nature, tragedy brings the good things on people, you know, whether it was the mining thing, you know, the issue of the mining, the miners who were trapped in Chile, you know, all the wave of solidarity and love that brought, you know, when a hurricane hits, that's when we see, you know, people giving. And that's you know, that's a wave of things that, you know, it's, you know, something, somehow, you know, tragedy brings good things too, mm-hmm. you know, with it.
There's so many media types. Oh, the Miami Heat won this championship. That brings our community together. Well, maybe for about 48 hours. And,
yeah, I don't believe in those things.
Then it's back to things as usual. Let's go to Albert. Whoops. My mistake. Line two. Albert in Miami. Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, how you doing? I was listening, and first of all, I want to begin to saying, The gentleman is so right. It's all about education. Without education, we're not going to have anything. We're not going to have... We can go forward in life without people being educated. And everything is starting in your house. And this is something about the immigrants. When you live in Miami, when you're raised in Miami, when you in this city, when you get out of this city, you see the difference between Miami and immigrants. I took a road trip from San Diego to Miami. It took me a week and a half. I stopped everywhere. I was doing the tour and the sightseeing. And it's a difference between the immigrants that you see in Miami and the immigrants that you see in the West Coast or in the Midwest and all the way over there in the other side of the United States. People, that not what you think it is. When you say that, oh, the immigrants pick up the agriculture, and it's just a little small bunch of them that's a workaholic. The rest, they come to this country, I don't know why they have to have 5, 10, 7, 8 kids. I don't know, but it's happening.
Let's let Daniel comment on that.
On what, on children of immigrants?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you have...
Could
I
you
mean,
sum up your point really quickly, Albert?
Well, my point is, if we don't have education, and we keep helping those people, and we keep giving whatever they want, thing is never going to go forward. It's never going to be the end of it. And you said you're talking about police brutality. Yeah, police brutality, it is everywhere. But you never see what is it that the person did or that immigrant did, whoever it did, to get to the point to where the police officer has to use brutality. I mean, you look at the levels of education, or when you go to schools, and okay, it's 10 brothers, no one didn't go to school, maybe one of them went to school, and what's up with the rest?
I think we have to be really careful about not using any stereotypicals or prejudice. I mean, I think immigrants, if you see this country, I mean, you know, most of the accomplishments, you know, came from different waves of immigration. So we can't, you know, pinpoint a lack of education. I'm an immigrant, and you probably are an immigrant, and we're well educated. So it's, you know, but education is key for everything, for educating the public, for more tolerance, for more.
And not saying that it isn't difficult being a police officer in a very stressful job where you're put in a lot of many difficult situations.
Yeah, and brutality is not only against immigrants. I mean, we've seen some cases here, of issues between the Miami police and the African-American community that's American, U.S. born. So it's not, you know, particularly something related to immigration.
Daniel Shorebrough, tell me a little more about what you were telling me about before our program about the airport tribute called 100 Latino Influential South Floridians, and you're included there.
Yes, well, that's one of the rewards of my work. I was selected, and I'm very happy about it because of what the meaning of this recognition is. I was selected as one of the 100 most influential Latinos of Miami, and it's not because of highly fashion or anything like that. It's because of the work we've expressed here, of what I'm trying to do, changing the community. This is a project that will have an exhibit at the airport. Some people might have seen it because this is the second year they do it in the American Airlines new terminal. They do an exhibit of the 100 Latinos with some quotes about why we love Miami and why we're doing what we're doing. And there's a book also that comes out with a profile of one of each person of the persons. And the goal is to highlight precisely the contribution of Latino immigrants to Miami. It's a project that started in Spain. And, you know, it started in Madrid, and now it's coming to Miami. So people can see my face, hopefully, in the airport, I think, after the fall.
Once again, quickly, that Facebook address?
It's Daniel Shorebrough, and my email is dshore@yahoo.com. I welcome comments and anything if you want to contact me. I'm around.
Well, it's always a great pleasure. We'll have to have you back on sooner next time, Daniel.
It's a pleasure for me and a blessing. Thank you so much for having me.
And that wraps up today's edition. My apologies to those callers we couldn't get on the air. Our show was produced by Richard Ives, technical direction by Bonnie Berman and Paul Leary, gives production assistance. Find free MP3 downloads and audio archives at our website, that's WLRN.org. Also, author and book links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Give us feedback and discussion there as well. Tomorrow's program looks at the worldwide domination of corporations with David Rothkopf. Walmart has revenues higher than the GDP of all but 25 countries. The Gates Foundation spends more than the World Health Organization. And to the calendar, on this day in 1911, 101 years ago, the birth of comedian Lucille Ball in Jamestown, New York. She first met Desi Arnaz while in a Broadway musical in 1940. They divorced in 1960. Also on this day in 1917, 95 years ago, the birth of actor Robert Mitchum in Bridgeport, Connecticut. A one-time pro boxer, he was once put on a Georgia chain gang for vagrancy and escaped. He played villains on the old Hopalong Cassidy TV odor. And remember Max Cady in Cape Fear. One more before we sign off. On this day in 1991, 21 years ago, the death of veteran newsman Harry Reasoner. He and Mike Wallace initiated 60 Minutes in 1968 on CBS. He went to ABC in 1970. then returned to CBS. We leave with a thought from Harry Reasoner, born in Dakota City, Iowa. Quote, journalism is a kind of profession or craft or racket for people who never wanted to grow up and go out into the real world. This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.